when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 51 of Prepping 2.0, the return of Special Forces Ted. Yes, he was a guest on for two episodes earlier, and now he's back for a third. Everybody loves Special Forces Ted. As I will describe more, he's a real dude, and he's a character in the 299 Days book series, and he's really the Special Forces guy. So a lot of truth here on this. We will not be having Shelby with us today. There are a variety of things that need to be done. You know, we have day jobs, both of us, and kids, and it's football season. I'm just going to say that. So there are important things going on, but she will be with us on the next show. I wanted to introduce three great new sponsors that we have. As you guys may or may not know, Shelby and I pay for the production costs of this show, which are rather, you know, stout, because we have an incredibly good producer who puts a really, really good show together, and that's not free and that's not cheap. So now we have three new sponsors. You'll be hearing their ads on the show, and I encourage you to go and check them out. The first one is EMP Shield. We had Andrew from EMP Shield on a few episodes ago, and it's this device that, for real, will protect whatever it's wired into, like a home or a generator or a vehicle, from an EMP pulse, which is a game changer. And it's been tested, government testing, government contracts, for real. I didn't think it was possible. So EMP Shield, welcome to Prepping 2.0. Also, Numana Foods. This is very exciting, too. I've known the owner of Numana Foods for quite some time, and I have purchased and eaten Numana Foods. It's freeze-dried foods, but in sort of a large bulk family pack sort of way. It's not Mountain House. It's not individual servings. So they're on. There's a coupon code for the Numana Foods stuff. And there's also a coupon code for EMP Shield, by the way. And you'll just have to listen to the ads to find out what the coupon code is. Our third new sponsor we're very excited about is Kati Armor, C-A-T-I, as in come and take it. I love the name of that company. And they make steel body armor plates. And they're a new sponsor, and I think we'll see. There might be a discount code for folks. We're going to have all three of these folks on the show. We already had Andrew from EMP Shield. We're going to be having Numana Foods on in the next few episodes. And we're also going to be having Brian, the Kati Armor guy, on in the next few episodes. Because there's more to the freeze-dried food that Numana has than meets the eye. And there's more to steel body armor. The whole topic of body armor, I think, will be a really good topic for you guys, because it is Prepping 2.0. It's that next level. Give you and your guys an unfair advantage, your family an unfair advantage. Why wouldn't you? Well, as usual, we have the top 100 things that go the fastest in a collapse, which is on our website, prepping2-0.com. This is a great list. It was prepared by some folks that made it through the Bosnian crisis, and it is, as the name implies, a list of things that go the quickest, you know, from stores or wherever. So these are 100 valuable items. And the cool thing about this list is many of them are not things that you would think of normally. I mean, and boy, we got a great example of that. Number 43 is writing paper, pads, notebooks, pencils, and solar calculators. Well, I just take notes on my phone. You know, that should be good enough. Yeah, that's not going to work. You're going to need to add things. Solar calculators, for example. You're going to have trading posts. You're going to need to add things. Make conversions. Maybe you're converting in and out of old dollars and now into gold and silver or something like that. Pencils are key. They don't run out. They work all the time. They don't dry out. The Russians, by the way, use pencils all the time because they're kind of a little bit lower tech and surprisingly effective at the same time. And then notepads and all of this, you're going to really need these. You can't just go to Office Depot when this happens. So that's something that, as kind of the admin guy on my team. I'm the one that always has something to write on, all that kind of stuff. And I find it invaluable because let's say things have fallen apart and you need to keep track of things like, I don't know, a license plate number of a vehicle that's very suspicious. You're going to really pads and something to write on. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we get a lot of rain. I'm a big fan of write in the rain pens and pads, and that's R-I-T-E in the rain, pens and pads. So another thing that is like everything else on this list of 100 things, first of all, something you may not have normally thought of. And second of all, completely cheap and available and obtainable now. And almost everything on this list of 100 things are things that don't spoil or expire. So it's not like you need to, you know, freeze dry a pencil and add water and use it later, right? So these are all things you can just get some of, tuck away, know how to find them. And when bad things happen, you will be ready to go with really, really valuable stuff. Well, okay, enough of me. What everybody wants to hear from is Special Forces Ted. And seriously, the download numbers when Special Forces Ted is on, very, very high. You guys love this guy. So I would like to introduce Special Forces Ted. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Glenn. Thanks for having me back.
Hello, Ted. Yeah, there you go. You bet. And just so everybody knows, Ted is on Skype from a remote location. So the connection's been pretty good so far, but you never know when that can change. Thanks for being on the show. Another thing I wanted to note about Special Forces Ted is that there's going to be a second edition of the 299 Days book series. It's going to be, I will say, an update. Now, things aren't going to radically change, but plenty of interesting details and one storyline in particular is going to change. Special Forces Ted's character and role will not change because, to be honest, I nailed it. I just nailed what Ted would do and how he would do it and how his colleagues would do it. So that won't change. But so be looking for the second edition of 299 Days, which will be out in print for sure. Not sure about audiobooks. That's a pretty big investment. It'll be out right after the 2020 elections, which is a great segue, Ted, into what are your thoughts on the 2020 elections? And forget who wins and loses, because this isn't a partisan, this isn't a political thing, and quite honestly, I don't care. I mean, I care, but you know what I mean. What do you? We'll give you two scenarios. Let's say Donald Trump wins the election. What do you think the reaction is in the country? And then the second question would be, what if the Democrat, who we would presume would be a socialist Democrat, wins? How do you see the reaction? So first, what if Trump wins? What do you see the reaction being, and how does that affect preppers?
Well, the way I kind of look at it is, if Donald Trump wins the Electoral College vote, but he doesn't win the popular vote, I think that's going to increase the divide, in the country, and especially with the Lemas, and that's going to give them grounds for more violent protests and escalate what they're doing. And I think that if Donald Trump loses, then it's going to be detrimental to us preppers, because then the left will definitely be in charge, take charge, and keep the presidency, I believe, for an indefinite amount of time. And we'll start to lose our rights left and right. I think that this upcoming election can be very, very trying for our country and for our families. So we got to keep a close eye on that. And if you're not prepared, get prepared, because I think it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, what you're saying has been universally the opinion of a lot of people I know. And by the way, these are folks that are very independent people like you are, and they don't do groupthink, and they don't just parrot what their colleagues are saying just to fit in like the left usually does. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep it vague, and you should keep it vague too. Folks in your line of work, do they think 2020 is going to be a cakewalk? Do they think everything's just normal, or are they concerned about the 2020 elections as being a potential triggering event to some badness?
Yeah, I think everyone is kind of on edge right now, and people, I think for the most part, people in my community are anticipating something to happen. And I don't know if everyone thinks it's going to be as catastrophic as I do, but I think people are definitely making preparations for what they wouldn't normally be doing. With that said, just to be safe, better be safe than sorry. I would definitely consider all your options and make a plan A, plan B, plan C if you can, and really start to plan this out, because it might be tires start burning the streets. It's going to be too late to come up with a plan then.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when there was a big riot, I want to say 2015 in London, riots and burning, all of that kind of stuff. And it was really serious. I think it got downplayed on American media. So listeners, if you're thinking, I don't remember that, that's because it was downplayed. But it was a pretty serious situation. I remember a story that came out of some London newspaper that there was a huge spike in Amazon orders for cricket bats when this was going on. So here's the thinking. Many, many unprepared people in London, which of course has terrible gun laws, and quite honestly, Britain and Europe in general, not a real history of solid self-reliance and liberty, pretty dependent group of people. So when their city, and you mentioned tires start burning, which is what it triggered this image in my mind, you got your city burning and you can't move around, you've got no guns, you've got no way to defend yourself. A lot of people in London thought that the answer was to go online and order cricket bats. Cricket, of course, is a British sport. It's kind of like a baseball bat. And my next question was, did you guys really think that the Amazon trucks are just going to tootle around and be able to deliver these things with all this civil disturbance and barricades and fires and everything else? Boy, that's a great example of people not being prepared and then suddenly saying, oh, golly, we need something. I'll just order it up on Amazon. I think that's the kind of thing you're getting at. And one of the topics we talked a lot about on the previous two episodes, which I highly recommend people go back and listen. We're not going to retrod that ground. But one of the topics we covered, and an important point in my mind, is this question, I think, of whether the military and law enforcement in general are going to be maniacal dictators or not. And that's obviously a very general thing, is as we talked about in the previous episodes, there are exceptions to every rule. But you're a guy who's in this community, and I know a ton of guys like you, and I have deep conversations with them. I've come to the conclusion that the vast majority of the military, especially the more elite you are, to be honest, and law enforcement, they're going to kind of melt away, or that would be more law enforcement or the military. They will not let horrible things happen. So can you address that for anybody out there that thinks, you know, everyone in the military and law enforcement is out to get them? What do you say to those folks? Because you've got an insight that is pretty rare.
Yeah, I think that for the elite part of the military, I think generally speaking, they're definitely not going to come after U.S. citizens and try to disarm them, stuff like that. I don't see that happening. With that said, same thing with law enforcement. I think law enforcement may stick around for a week, but as soon as it starts getting dangerous for their family, stuff like that, or uncertain, not having backup, they're not going to stick around for that. I'll be very surprised if law enforcement sticks around. You know, everyone says, you know, you have three days without food until you have, you know, a crisis on your hands. Well, those law enforcement people in the same boat, they have to feed their families and take care of what's theirs in addition to protect the public. I'd give them a week at tops before they went home and started taking care of their families.
Yeah, that's very consistent with what other folks have told me. One law enforcement guy in particular said that his department, they had a conversation. And he's in a good part of the country, so this isn't exactly Chicago. It's probably different in the cities. I don't know. But, I mean, getting back to your family is universal, so that's going to be true. But this guy said in this rural area that they had a rule of thumb. If they can't get backup, if they call in for backup and it takes more than a half an hour for somebody to come and help them or even acknowledge that they need help, given the distances in rural areas, it might take a half an hour of driving. But it basically, if there's silence for a half an hour, or the dispatcher says, we can't help, we have 912 fires going on right now, or something like that, that's when it's okay to go home. So they're going to stick it out as long as they can, but when they can't get backup, that's when they're ineffective and incredibly vulnerable. So I think there have been a lot of discussions in a lot of police departments and perhaps military units about this scenario. And law enforcement and the military are not the enemy. There will be pockets of bad people, of course, like with everything else. I'm a lawyer, right? I mean, I know what bad people are like. And so you're going to have those things. Well, here's another, you know, general question. What do you see the direction of the country? Where's it going in that? And I know you're not a political guy. I know that you're just very, very practical. But that's actually good. That's why I'm asking you the question. And you've been in other parts of the world where you've seen governments falling. You've seen insurgents. You've seen all that kind of stuff. So just what's your take on the direction of the United States right now?
Well, if you watch the news would want you to believe that the whole world or all of the United States is pushing for socialism, and I don't know if that's entirely true, because as soon as you get away from the big cities, you realize that most people are still God fearing Americans that want to live in this republic. But I think that if you look at the raw numbers of people who want handouts and stuff like that, we definitely are pushing closer and closer to socialism every day. And I wouldn't be surprised if, a socialist candidate does get pushed into, at least winning the popular vote, if not even the entire electoral college.
Yeah, and you've mentioned the popular vote in the electoral college. One of the political scenarios that I think is possible, I'm not going to say likely, I'm going to say possible, is that Donald Trump wins the electoral vote and the Democrat wins the popular vote. As I sit here and think about it, I think it actually is likely now that I run the numbers quickly in my head. And then you could have a scenario where you have the two presidents problem. You've got the actual constitutional president, and then you've got all these, goofball skulls full of mush millennials and Gen Zs. No offense, guys, but, I mean, there are plenty of good ones, but anyway, that think that it really is democratic. I think your use of the term republic earlier made me think of this. I mean, how does that play out? You've seen other countries, maybe you've not been in them, but you've at least studied it, because that's what Green Berets do. What happens when there are two somewhat legitimate sort of kind of maybe actual presidents, the two presidents scenario? Well, I mean, how does that affect people?
Well, and that's what it boils down to is legitimacy. In Afghanistan, you have your shadow governance, and that's exactly what it would be here. Is if you have a president like Donald Trump who wins the Electoral College, he will be our legitimate president. But if people don't want to honor that, or if the person who wins the popular vote, if he tries to decide, hey, I'm now the president, and causes that wedge between neighbors, that things are going to start to unravel very, very rapidly. And I don't think everyone is ready for what that is. And everyone who talks about this whole, Civil War II is coming and all that, I mean, they very well could be right. But I'm telling you, you don't want to be fighting a war in the streets of America. That's something that you don't want to have to live through unless it's the very last option. I truly do believe that.
That's one, and thank you for mentioning that. That's one of the other things that I've found with guys like you that I know. I've, first of all, never been in combat, never been in the military, never been in law enforcement, never been in an actual gunfight. So let me be, just real about that. I would love to never, ever be in a gunfight. I don't want any of this stuff to happen. Shelby and I are just the people who kind of look over the horizon and see stuff and talk about it. And, guys, and you're in that boat too, Ted. But one of the things that I appreciate from all the guys I know who have been in combat is the universal, I don't know, feeling isn't even a strong enough word, the universal thing that they don't want combat, and anybody who thinks they want this war is just crazy because it's way uglier and it's not like it is on TV. And I say this not only to emphasize the point you made, but I say this because also I think some of our detractors out there, some people on the left who think that preppers are a bunch of bloodthirsty monsters who are just looking for an excuse to go shoot people they never really liked. You're misreading us, leftists. You are absolutely misleading us. We could not be more clear that we don't want any of this, but we think it's going to happen and people need to get ready. So I'm just debunking a couple myths out there, because I'll tell you what, Ted, this is kind of interesting. As the show has become more and more popular, we get more and more leftists that are listening, and I think are trying to find out if we're plotting to overthrow the government of the United States, which, like, we're not, because a variety of reasons why we're not, one of which is I don't think we could do it. I mean, I don't think that you and me sitting here talking have any effect on the government of the United States. It's kind of like global warming or climate change or whatever they're calling it now. You and me driving our trucks are not going to change the temperature on the North Pole. So, you know, it's not going to change anything. But I'm just trying to debunk myths like that. We have a couple minutes, about 2 minutes before we break into segment two for the regular show, which is the free internet show and the one that is carried on a bunch of radio stations. Thank you, radio stations, by the way. We never give you guys the shout outs that you deserve, but we love our radio listeners. And then we'll come back. So a quick question, maybe it's not quick. Do you think that folks out there, maybe like some younger people that are listening, that are maybe thinking about going into special operations, you know, it's about a minute to answer this. Maybe that's unfair. In general, do you think it's a really good thing to do, or do you think that it's something that requires a lot of hard thought?
Joining the military in general, I think, takes a lot of hard thought. You shouldn't do it just on a whim, for sure. But yeah, do your research and make sure that you're prepared both physically and mentally if that's the direction you want to go into special operations, because it's a huge challenge, and the likelihood of someone actually passing everything, you know, the odds are against you. So, you know, have a backup plan too if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty common. You mentioned the mental toughness, which, as I understand, never having experienced any of this, is probably even harder than the physical stuff. Yeah, no, that's good. Well, let's see. Can you give folks about 15 seconds of shout out where you're at right now, or not? Is that not a good idea?
No, for sure. Yeah. I'm up at Prepper Camp this weekend up in the foothills of North Carolina. And, it's a huge prepping event put on by Rick and Jane Austin. And, they have some really good speakers here this weekend. And there's preppers from all over the country here. And it's a really good place to network and take some classes and just meet some people. It's pretty cool.
Great, Special Forces Ted. We are going to go into our next segment, and we're going to hold you over. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Prepping 2.0 is about that next level of prepping. One of the key 2.0 items to have is bulletproof body armor plates. I used to think body armor was too tactical for a regular guy like me, but it isn't. Give yourself, your family, and your team an unfair advantage when bullets are flying. Body armor used to be expensive and hard to get. Not anymore. KD Armor, and that stands for Come and Take It, makes solid and affordable body armor for normal people. Get body armor while you can. The clowns in Congress are trying to prohibit future sales. KT Armor is the place to get it. CATIArmor.com. Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount when you use the coupon code GRANT.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years, the perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to Numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the second segment of episode 51, which is the return of Special Forces Ted. One of the very cool things about being a Patreon sponsor, and that's patreon.com, prepping 2.0, like spell out the word point zero, is that you get to ask our guests questions. That's one of many benefits, but let's focus on that one. And we got so many Patreon questions for Special Forces Ted that we actually have more than he could do in the after show, because typically we have guests answer Patreon's questions in the after show. The after show is after the regular show and is exclusively for Patreon supporters. But we wanted to give the regular show listeners, which include the radio listeners, a little bit of a taste of the cool questions that our Patreons have and also some of the answers. So we're going to spend the second segment and however long into the after show it might run answering the 28 awesome questions that Patreons ask Special Forces Ted, because it's not common for you to get to ask a Green Beret some questions about prepping and similar things. And so people really like that. They like that more than asking fiction authors. So there you go. Todd Father asked, go about training your local team. What are the best things to practice?
So I would look at it personally on a centralized and decentralized methodology of training. With that said, I know that you trained with your team quite a bit, and you could probably chime in on this too. But I would think that since time with your training team or your survival team is going to be limited, because everyone has lives and day jobs and everything. People should, when they're at home, decentralized from their unit, work on individual type tasks, like learning how to, efficiently do magazine changes, how to, remedy malfunctions on your weapon systems, how to do individual movement techniques, low crawl, high crawl, 3 to 5 second rush, stuff like that you can train on with no one else there, just, bettering yourselves. Of course, doing physical training. If you're not physically fit, you're just going to be another casualty. That's the bottom line up front. So train with your gear, with your go bag or your kit, whatever you have. Make sure you integrate that into your training so that the first time you put it on is in a real gunfight. And then once you get together with your team, that's when you start working on those collective tasks, those collective battle drills. When anything from, I would definitely look at your operational environment and say you have a lot of gravel roads and small intersections you need to cross, stuff like that. Practice crossing linear danger areas, practice crossing open fields, movement at night, stuff like that. If you live in a more urban setting, definitely worry about, at least getting a foothold into a structure like room clearing. And generally speaking, I would think that, your most dangerous time whenever you're doing a operation is when you're moving to or from, the place that you're going, your target building or whatever. So you practice doing those convoy operations or, dismounted patrolling, moving in a file and a wedge and, stuff like that. When you have everyone together and, when you're not co-located, that's when you go back to working out SOPs and, you know, making sure everyone's on the same sheet of music, so that when you do link up, then you know, you don't have to worry about all the little stuff, and you guys just start performing better.
Yeah, exactly. And boy, you hit it. A couple thoughts that I came up with, and this is from my own experience, and this is from years and years of doing this. Now, when I say years and years of doing this, I don't mean I know everything. I mean I've made some mistakes and learned a bunch of stuff. So use your gear comes to mind. There's something about the ease and, I don't know, coolness sort of sparkliness of buying gear and then never fitting it to you and never actually using it. And I know you've experienced this, Ted, but, you know, you can have this plate carrier with probably some KD Armor AR-500 steel plates or something. But anyway, you've got this plate carrier and you put it on and you spend all day in it and you realize that that magazine pouch being there is rubbing your arm and causing you chafing, or you realize you can't get to your radio or those sorts of things. There's absolutely no substitute for actually using your gear. And one of the things that was hard for me as just, you know, civilian who like buys things as a consumer is I didn't appreciate that sometimes it takes two or three tries at the right gear to get it right. In other words, this isn't something where you buy one and it's just going to work. For concealed carry guys and ladies, it would be like holsters. Some work and some don't. Everybody's an individual. There are so many cool videos on YouTube. One channel I respect, it's done by a special operations guy, is Grand Thumb, like Grand as in M1 Grand, G-A-R-A-N-D, Thumb. And he's got some down-to-earth stuff, and he goes through these things. So actually use your gear because there's no substitute for it. Comms, you mentioned movements. The integration of comms radios is absolutely critical. You'll have this mind-opening experience the first time that you've gone from in the past just moving, and then you've got some Baofengs with some little headsets or something. These are all inexpensive, and I've talked about comms plenty. PAM radio, by the way, prepper amateur radio, which is different than ham radio, is coming out. These are going to be some electronic flashcards on a phone for free that go over the practical stuff. It's not a ham radio prep test, right? It's not learning this stuff for the test. It's the practical stuff, like I'm mentioning now, headsets, for example. When you use comms and you can direct each other and get information, it'll open your mind. So I highly recommend that. And let's see. Yeah, practice movements with a team. You mentioned that. I talk about it in the book, where the team in the book, the real live team, we're so familiar with each other that it's like when you're playing basketball and you don't even look at a guy and you know he's open and you send him a bounce pass while you're still looking over the other way and he catches it. That's the goal. That's what we're talking about. It's kind of that seamlessness, which takes a lot of time, by the way, which is another good point. This takes time and it needs to be maintained. You can't have, you know, do this a couple weekends and then not do it for a while. This is an ongoing thing. And you mentioned something that never gets mentioned. I think you mentioned this. Yeah, you did actually. And that's convoys. Driving in a convoy, and that's just a group of vehicles. It doesn't need to be like a bunch of tanks or something. I mean, this is a very civilian, doable thing. And turning and making sure everybody knows which direction to go and keeping your speeds appropriate so that other cars, you know, don't get in your convoy is essential, and nobody ever practices it. I didn't even think of it until my guys started doing it and they taught me how to do it. And there's always that switch over in your mind when you go from civilian driving, which is usually like I need to get there really, really fast and I'm going to make a bunch of lane changes and stuff, to convoy driving where you've got to think about keeping a group of, I don't know, four or five vehicles all together and not gun it through that yellow light and that kind of stuff. So I highly recommend it. I don't know how to learn it other than by doing it. So convoy driving, because here's the thing, you got all this gear, and you got all this training, and you got this super cool team of dudes, and then you got to get somewhere in a bad situation. and somebody takes off at a yellow light, and then your group gets, you know, lost and separated. I bet you've seen a lot of bad things happen when people do not do proper convoy driving. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. With convoys, you have to have your contingency planning, right? So not only you have to have your comms up, but you have to have, you know, contact right, contact left. What if one of the vehicles in the formation, you know, becomes a mobility kill, you know, hits IED or whatnot? You know, what's your plan? Are you going to recover that vehicle on the X? Are you just going to crossload everyone and move, you know, move off the X? What are you going to do? You know, there needs to be a plan before it happens, so everyone doesn't just sit there and freeze and get shot up, you know, in the kill zone.
Yeah, exactly. And who's going to be the lead vehicle? Presumably somebody who knows where they're going. And then the last vehicle, that's also presumably somebody that knows where they're going. And everybody in between can be sort of pushed or pulled to the right place. Yeah, exactly. Comms, another reason comms are essential. You know, convoy driving is really a prepping 2.0 topic when you think about it, because you got people and you got stuff and you're going somewhere. Okay, that's maybe prepping 1.0, but actually getting there is and the skill and the little bit of time it takes to do this, that's a 2.0 thing. So good stuff. Let's see. How do you set up? And this is Trevor's question. And since we're on regular radio in the show, I probably will just give first names of Patreons, because normally they get their names first and last read on the after show, which is a small community of core folks. And so anyway, here we go. And I don't always know whose name is publicizable or not. Anyway, Trevor says, how do you set up and man a security perimeter? How many people are needed for a given area? Oh boy, good topic.
Yeah, the problem is, there's a, the military has a term called METTC, right? So mission, enemy, time, troops, and terrain, and then civilians on the battlefield, right? And all of those things come into play. You know, what are you trying to secure? Are you trying to secure a shopping cart in a parking lot? Or are you trying to secure, a castle on top of a mountain? Everything is a little bit different. With that said, you're going to have certain principles you're going to have to cover. Like, you want to achieve 360-degree security, try to have open fields of fire, have choke points and channelization. That way you can channelize people into your mass casualty-producing weapons or maybe a trap of some sort. It's not just a one-answer kind of question. It's very complicated. There are some military manuals out there that would probably be pretty helpful to look into. I think it's the FM5-250. It's an engineering manual, and they talk about fortifying defenses and stuff like that. And well, there's a lot of good stuff in that manual. But yeah, it's a kind of a broad spectrum question to give you a pinpointed answer to. But you know, stick to the principles. You know, 360-degree security. Try to have good fields of fire. If you can, you know, have some kind of wire obstacles or some kind of obstacles to slow your enemy down so you can get them in the kill zone and take them out. All of that stuff is relevant. And you still have to have the flexibility of you and your people to maneuver within, you know, your free space too. All that stuff you have to consider. Hopefully that isn't too broad for you.
No, that's fantastic. And one of the things I note from what you're saying is something that you and I have talked about, and I don't think others appreciate this. Everyone assumes, and that is that you're talking about fundamental things here. You're talking about really basic, solid infantry skills. A lot of people assume special forces or special operations in general, you guys are like jumping out of the space shuttle with a parachute and landing 7,000 miles away and coming in submarines and doing all that kind of crazy high tech stuff. But what you're talking about are those fundamental things. And they say, and from what I've seen, I believe this to be correct. You know, the difference between special operations and standard infantry is mastery of those basics. Cause everything you said, funneling people, moving people, communicating, this is all basic stuff. My point with that is that you can be pretty effective with basic stuff if you master the basic stuff. So, you know, keep that in mind. And one of the parts of the questions, and you're correct. I mean, I'm telling a Green Berets, right. But anyway, how many people are needed? You said, boy, I don't know. I would simply make the point about community, and that is this stuff takes way more people than you think to pull off. How many people need to secure a perimeter? A lot. I mean, it's going to vary, and you have to have people, you have to have friendlies, you have to have trusted people, you have to have people that have a stake in protecting whatever it is that needs to be protected, and that's all community. And we've talked about that. That is a Prepping 2.0 idea, is that involving as many as possible. Now, you need to be careful not to involve goofballs who are going to mess things up, and you need to know and trust people, because that could be a problem too for a variety of reasons, but it always takes more people than you think. And I imagine when special forces are out training indigenous forces that are helpful to the United States, you probably realize, as I'm sure you have, that it takes a lot of people to do some of these things, basic things. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. And the thing is, you can't expect one person to be good at everything. If you have a guy who's like a super good radio operator, but he doesn't know which end of the gun to point at the bad guy, that guy should probably stay on the radio. You know what I mean? When, find the right task for the right person. Not everyone should be, you know, patrolling the perimeter. And you know, it's just everyone, not everyone, but most people have a talent, something they're really good at. And just figure out, you know, do some talent management, figure out who's best suited doing what, and then try to cross-train people as much as possible, as long as it's relevant.
Wow. And this is why we have you on the show. What you just said is awesome. Trevor asks a second question. He says, what gear is mandatory to have solid security, and what is merely nice to have?
I mean, that's a great question. I like to have the rule of thumb. You don't want to bring a gun to a knife to a gunfight. So definitely have a gun. I mean, you know, stick to the basics with that. You know, I'm a big proponent of night vision. I think night vision's awesome. I know not everyone can afford it, but if there's a way to get it, I would highly recommend getting some night vision, because it's going to be a game changer for you. Simple things like, depending on, you know, where you live and how you're trying to defend an area, you know, using barbed wire, concertina wire, stuff like that, any kind of obstacles to slow down people, that's going to be huge to, you know, giving you a little bit of standoff, keeping people away from your front porch, so you have, you know, time to react and defend your area. Basically, the sky's the limit, and one good rule of thumb is, you know, your fighting position always needs improvement. It's never complete, so just continue to add to it. Until the bullets start flying, you just keep on working on it and keep on making it better. Hopefully, that helps.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a general question, and the answers are necessarily general. I can say from my perspective that two things that are mandatory, water. Everybody forgets about water. And you got all these guys with, you know, $7,000 AR-15s, and they don't have 7 cents worth of water. And not having 7 cents worth of water is going to kill you probably sooner than not having a $7,000 AR. So keep that in mind. And then comms. You keep hearing me say it over and over again. Comms, it's absolutely standard in what you guys do. I mean, think about it. Go on Google Images and type in, you know, Green Beret or something, and look at all the pictures of anybody out in the field. I would say, well, I won't say anybody. I'll say special operations folks, because you guys are usually not getting instructions, you know, from like a squad leader or something. All you guys that are mobile and doing these things always have radios. There's always antennas sticking up. There's always that kind of stuff. And a mini rant for just 45 seconds. Folks, comms is so much easier than you think it is. It's so much less money than you think it is. And it is so much more important than you think it is. There we go. I actually came in under 45 seconds on that rant. That's kind of my hallmark, 45 seconds, because people quit listening after that point. Ben asks a question. Thoughts on the 6.8 SPC as a defensive round?
So I don't have any experience with the 6.8. I've never used it. One thing that I would say, though, is just think about the area that you're operating in, you know, your hometown or whatever, and consider what the prevalent rounds are in that area. Battlefield recovery is a huge thing. So, you know, you run out of bullets for your specialty 6.8 or whatever. What are you going to do to get more bullets for that gun? You know, it'd be a lot easier to find, you know, magazines 5.56 or even AK ammo or something like that versus, you know, some, you know, one-off type round, you know, 6.8 SPC. With that said, from what I've read and from what I've talked to people, it's, you know, it's a really decent round. But I just think if you're looking at long-term preparedness type thing, I don't know if I would commit to that just for battlefield recovery reasons. And with that said, if I could just say something about comms real quick, and I agree with you completely about what you're saying. About, I agree with you completely about what you're saying about your comms. If I could add to that, don't just rely on your radio comms, especially for tactical communications, all right? So you have your PACE plan, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency plan, right? So maybe voice over FM is your primary, right? And next thing you have is your hand and arm signals. And then after that, maybe you have like, you know, chem light bundles or infrared chem light bundles if you have nods on, stuff like that. Or even the daytime, one thing we would use years ago is just a VS-17 panel with a rock in it, shred it up and use it as the flaming rock to be the shift and lift fire signal for, you know, doing like the squad attack drill or something like that. You know, so don't just have one deep communication, but definitely have your PACE plan going. That way, if comms fails you, which it does, it happens, you have a backup and something to fall back on.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, even down to things like, and this isn't as much tactical, this is more, I don't know, strategic, but having a way of writing on a building. Let's say everyone's going to meet, if there's a big social disturbance of some kind, everybody's going to meet at somebody's bug out location. Having a way of writing on the door, even, hey, we're going to the alternate place, and everybody knows what the alternate place is, all those kinds of things. Yeah, that's a really good point. Communications is much bigger than radios. It is visual communications. A VS-17 panel, everybody, is a colored, it's really brightly colored. It's for like putting on top of usually a vehicle so that aircraft overhead know that you're friendly and they don't like shoot you up and stuff like that. So there's a million things to that. Tons of great YouTube videos. And this is another thing to actually practice with your team and to at least talk about and those sorts of things. Exactly. So that nub asks CQB, dynamic entry or slice the pie and why? And go ahead and explain folks to folks what dynamic entry is and slicing the pie. We're not talking about portions of delicious dessert items with slicing the pie.
Right. So dynamic entry is kind of an older technique. I think the big army still uses it. And that's basically number one man's the rabbit. He takes the path of least resistance into the room. Number two man goes the opposite way, the number one man. Number three man follows the one man. Number four man follows the two man. And then you hit your points of domination in the room. With that said, you're jeopardizing the security. You're using speed instead of security getting into that room. And a lot of people were getting stitched up in the early days of the GWAT doing that technique. And Soft, in particular, we started doing stuff like, you know, slicing the pie, where you come up to the door, to the side of the door, either left side, right side of the door, whatever, and you start getting the angles inside that room. You know, having at least a meter standoff of that door and try to see what you can see in that room before you commit to it. Okay. Some people call it minimal penetration clearing. That way, if you do, you know, end up having a gunfight in that room, you're fighting one guy at a time instead of running in that room and fighting the whole room at once. And that makes a difference. With that said, they call it the point of diminishing return. And that's after you start pieing up to a point that, if you take one more step that you're going to expose yourself to that room, that's when you have to be completely committed and step center into that doorway and then do your work and push into that room if you're going to commit to it. Especially for, you know, prepper type stuff, I would never do a dynamic entry. You know, you're not doing hostage rescue. You're not trying to go to a crisis point, probably. You're, you know, more than likely you're just trying to make it through a building to strong point it to stay there at night or whatever. I would take your time and don't be in a hurry to die.
Well put. We have about a minute before we are done with the regular show, and we'll go into the after and answer a lot more of these really good questions. Ted, I want to take this minute or so and just thank you for coming on. You're a busy guy. You have a lot going on, and your presence here is very much appreciated. And you being the character, I appreciate that, because I could – first of all, people were fascinated, and they – and we tell the funny story all the time about – or I tell the funny story. Everyone thinks that I'm so creative. Oh, you have all these amazing – characters, 299 days, like this Special Forces Ted guy and this this Korean guy who's this great gunfighter who sells insurance. You know, you must be so creative. And I'm not creative, guys. These are just real dudes and real people, and they're interesting, and they're patriots, and they through the books you can illustrate with these characters a bunch of things to think about. That's what 299 Days in a Great State is all about, is getting people to just merely think about things. And Ted, you were a great way to do that. And a lot of people have been helped by you being a character in there. Well, we are out of time for the regular show. Join us in the after show. The next question we're going to answer is a great one. What role can women play on it? Thanks.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.